The fires in Southern California have been burning close to L.A., with video showing flames on the sides of the freeway on the road to the airport. Does that foreshadow anything for the Valley going forward? With me to talk about that is Don Falk, a professor in the School of Natural Resources and the Environment at the University of Arizona. He studies forest ecology there. And Don, the fires around L.A. seem to be a bit different in that they're very close to the urban environment. How much of what we're seeing in terms of more people being affected and more structures threatened or burned, how much of that is that people are building and living closer to where the fires have traditionally been? And how much encroachment are we seeing of fires into the more urban environment?
People love living near nature. That's the paradox and the irony of this whole situation. The problem is in Southern California, which, as we know, is one of the most intense real estate markets in the country. What that means is that people are moving into this very flammable, explosive chaparral ecosystem. And so the collision that we're seeing in Southern California in particular, although we saw it equally tragically in Northern California earlier this year, is not only that people are moving into these natural areas or heavily vegetated areas, but in fact the areas they're moving into have a particularly explosive fire regime. So when something does happen, a tragedy is very likely to ensue.
Are there any areas in Arizona that you see as kind of the same way, where lots of people are moving into previously undeveloped areas that might be ripe for a significant wildfire?
Right. So to evaluate that, you need to look at the elements in the equation. One is how many people are present in an area and how many are moving. Second, what is the land development pattern? Are these kind of one way in, one way out dispersed settlements where people could get trapped? Or are they more building along a larger area where there might be multiple escape routes? And then third is the property of the vegetation itself, as we were describing before. So in Arizona, we don't have exactly the kind of vegetation that we have that exists in Southern California, but we do have areas that certainly have that fire potential. We only need to go back to the 2013 Yarnell Hill fire in Yavapai County, or the 2005 Cave Creek complex fire, which burned 250,000 acres and was very, very destructive and involved a lot of really extreme fire behavior. So clearly our recent experience, just going back in the last 10 or 12 years, shows that we do have areas that can burn with this kind of spectacular, challenging fire behavior that is so destructive and so dangerous.
You mentioned the Cave Creek complex fire, and at the time, in certain parts of the North Valley, like in Scottsdale, you could certainly see the smoke, you could smell it to some degree. But it seems to me that's about as close as a really major wildfire has gotten to the Phoenix metro area. I'm wondering if you think that is about as close as a big wildfire could get to a major metro area in Arizona, be it Phoenix or Tucson. I mean, do you think one of those areas could really be affected by a big wildfire?
No, I don't think that that's as close as it could get. And if you want to answer to that question, ask people in Northern California or people around Los Angeles if they ever thought that there would be fires burning, leaping over the interstates and burning all the way to the ocean. I think there is a false sense of security based on the behavior of fires that we saw historically, which were under a different climate, and again, as you've pointed out, maybe different settlement patterns, so that now the fires have this extraordinary potential, and it's getting more intense. Of course, we do have tools for modeling fire behavior, and we do the best we can to understand where that fire potential is greatest. But when you have extreme weather conditions with 70, 80 mile per hour winds and 3 or 4% humidity and temperatures in, you know, the 90s and 100s, you have situations in which fire behavior kind of goes off the charts from what we can really predict.
Is there a consensus in the wildfire community, those who deal with them, those who study them, of if there is going to be a wildfire that really affects, for example, the valley here in Phoenix, is there a consensus as to sort of where it would come from, maybe where it would start, how it would approach the valley, and which parts of the region here might be most affected?
Right. So in general, our fire weather comes from the west to southwest. Those are the prevailing winds during fire season. And so the default might be to expect the fires to be spreading in from that direction. But during storms and during intense fire events, you can get very chaotic wind patterns. And so the patterns of fire spread can be quite unpredictable. In California, they have the additional wild card of the Santa Ana winds. During a Santa Ana wind, you can have hot, dry winds screaming down the mountains from the summits going toward the ocean at 60 and 70 miles an hour. And that's not a kind of wind event that we have at that scale in Arizona, but on small scales, those local winds can be a factor. So I think the bottom line is for directions of fire spread and where you would be looking to think about potential events coming from into a large dispersed metropolitan area like Phoenix, is that the fire could come from just about anywhere.
I would imagine that makes it a little scarier and a little more difficult to plan if you are a firefighter or a fire modeler.
Well, it's hard for firefighters because they, of course, after Yarnell Hill, really have to decide if they want to risk the lives of firefighters to save property. And more firefighting agencies are, rightly in my opinion, deciding that saving property is not worth human life. That means the people who are there and the buildings who are there are not going to be bailed out under extreme circumstances by firefighters willing to risk their lives. But I would add to your question, planners and county administrators, there's a big question of how we regulate development and land use in this country. And honestly, we're not very good at it. We have a fundamental bedrock principle about private property, which says that people have a right to build or do whatever they want on their property within limits. So we do recognize some limits, but they're fairly weak. And so you add to that then the question, where do cities and towns and counties get their revenue? Well, it's overwhelmingly from property taxes. And so a county administrator faced with a choice about whether to allow a new development or say no to it has to consider the potential loss of revenue if they say, no, we just can't have this development because it's too risky. And so the pressure, I think, is very strongly on people at the city and county and town level to allow development. And we don't really have very good tools in the United States for regulating that development.
Don Falk is a professor in the School of Natural Resources and the Environment at the U of A. He studies forest ecology. Don, thanks a lot for your time.
Great to talk with you.